Evet.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
Methane is a natural gas that traps more heat in Earth's atmosphere than carbon dioxide. Farm animals, especially cows, and the decay of plant matter in wet areas create the most methane. Last week, American government researchers announced that methane levels in the atmosphere had increased by a record amount. The report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, noted that the record broken had been set only the year before. Scientists measure methane in parts per billion, or ppb. Before the world's developed nations started building large factories about 170 years ago, the methane level in the atmosphere was 720 parts per billion. Now, it is more than double that amount. In 2020, methane went up by a record 15.3 ppb compared to the year before. 1 year later, it rose 17 ppb to reach 1,895.7 ppb. Scientists say methane releases, or emissions, affect climate change substantially, trapping 25 times more heat in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide. Robert Howarth studies methane at Cornell University. He called the report's findings extremely disturbing. The United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, said methane has contributed to about a 1.5 degree Celsius rise in temperature since the 1800s. The main difference between methane and carbon dioxide is how long they last. Carbon dioxide can remain for thousands of years, while methane disappears in about 9 years. As a result, many nations are trying to reduce methane emissions as a way to quickly slow the planet's warming. The goal is to prevent the world's temperature from rising more than 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius by the end of this century. Zeke Hausfather is a researcher for a climate science company called Berkeley Earth. He is concerned about the data from the last 2 years. We need to cut our methane emissions dramatically, and today we are clearly moving in the wrong direction, he said. However, he said cutting methane would quickly cool the climate. Lindsay Lan is an atmospheric scientist who works with NOAA and the University of Colorado. Lan said human activity is not the only reason for the rise in methane. She said it is also connected to the weather condition called La Niña, which changes the temperature of the Pacific Ocean. La Niña causes more rainfall, and some of the methane release has come from areas that are wetter than normal. Scientists are also concerned about future methane increases as frozen Arctic land warms. Lan said some scientists believed the recent increases may have been linked to COVID-19 and the changes it brought to human activities. But her research suggests the pandemic had little effect. Howarth said both fossil fuels and agriculture are critical to methane increases, but he said, "My research strongly points toward fossil fuels as being the largest cause of the increase since 2008. And Howarth blamed hydraulic fracturing, a method of pulling natural gas from the earth, for much of the increase. NOAA notes that about 30% of the methane in the atmosphere comes from businesses and human use of fossil fuels. That is the part that can most easily be reduced." Lan did a study of the chemical makeup of the methane increases since 2006 and said most comes from natural emissions from plant material decaying or from agriculture. In addition to the news about methane, NOAA said carbon dioxide levels are now about the same as they were 4.5 million years ago when seas were about 23 meters higher and the average temperature was warmer by about 3.9 degrees Celsius. Parts of the Arctic that are now frozen had large forests. In a statement, NOAA's chief, Rick Spinrad, said, "Emissions continue to move in the wrong direction at a rapid pace." I'm Dan Friedell.
Demand for batteries to power electric vehicles is expected to increase sharply in the coming years. To prepare for this demand, some nations are seeking to increase their own ability to produce the materials needed to make the batteries. Lithium-ion batteries are expected to remain the most widely used technology for EVs in the future. One of the main materials used to produce the batteries is lithium, a light metal substance. Other necessary materials include the metallic elements cobalt, manganese, and nickel. Prices for these materials have been rising as demand increases for EV batteries. The demand is expected to continue worldwide as major automakers keep expanding their EV production. China is currently the world leader in the EV market. In 2021, 3.4 million of the vehicles sold in China were electric, a report by the International Energy Agency found. Europe was the second largest market, with 2.3 million electric vehicles sold. Worldwide, the report said 6.6 million EVs were sold that year. Chinese companies currently produce the majority of materials used to make EV batteries, the mineral cobalt among them. The largest known supply of cobalt is in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Chinese companies control most of the cobalt mining operations there. Another necessary material, lithium, is found in many parts of the world, but it is costly and difficult to collect. Australia is the world's biggest producer of lithium. Other major suppliers include China, Argentina, and Chile. China also largely controls the lithium supply chain. Worldwide demand for lithium was about 317,500 metric tons in 2020. But industry estimates predict the demand could rise to more than six times that by 2030. Prices for lithium carbonate reached record highs in 2021, mainly because of strong demand from Chinese battery makers, Reuters news agency reports. The world's top nickel supplier is Indonesia, which produced about 1 million metric tons of the metal in 2021, the website Investing News reports. Other nations with large nickel mining operations include the Philippines, Russia, Australia, Canada, and Brazil. Most of the nickel used to produce EV batteries is expected to come from mining operations in Indonesia, Reuters reports. In recent years, several large Chinese mining companies have announced major investments in Indonesian nickel projects. Officials in the United States and other countries have said they will seek to mine and process more materials at home to produce EV batteries. Being less dependent on supply from other countries can help nations avoid high prices and availability issues. In February, U.S. President Joe Biden announced federal assistance programs to help companies mine and process lithium and other rare metals necessary to make EV batteries. "We can't build a future that's made in America if we ourselves are dependent on China for the materials that power the products of today and tomorrow," Biden said. And this is not anti-China or anti-anything else. It's pro-America, he added. Currently, only one active lithium mine is operating in the U.S., in the western state of Nevada. But new mining projects for lithium are now being developed in Nevada, Maine, North Carolina, and California. One way to collect lithium is through geothermal methods from underground water sources. One such U.S. operation in the Salton Sea in the California desert is expected to become operational next year. A spokesperson for California Governor Gavin Newsom told the Associated Press the effort may end up producing epic amounts of lithium. Companies in other countries also plan to use geothermal methods to collect lithium. In Britain, Cornish Lithium plans to start geothermal mining operations in southwest England in the coming years. A company official, Jeremy Rathall, told the French news agency AFP the operation aims to provide a significant share of Britain's lithium needs. In Germany, a German-Australian partnership called Vulcan Energy Resources announced plans last year to geothermally collect lithium from an area in the country's Black Forest area. Some scientists have estimated the area in southwest Germany could hold enough lithium to supply batteries for up to 400 million EVs. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. 1968 was a presidential election year in the United States. It was also one of the saddest and most difficult years in modern American history. The nation was divided by often violent disputes about civil rights and the war in Vietnam. President Lyndon Johnson had helped win major civil rights legislation. Yet, he had also greatly expanded American involvement in the war in Vietnam. By early 1968, it was almost impossible for him to leave the White House without facing anti-war protesters. Johnson wanted to seek another four-year term as president, but his popularity kept dropping as the war continued. He understood that he no longer had the support of a majority of the people. In March, he announced that he would not be a candidate.
I shall not seek, and I will not accept, the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
One reason Johnson decided not to seek re-election was a senator from Minnesota, Eugene McCarthy.
I intend to enter the Democratic primaries in four states, Wisconsin, Oregon, California, and Nebraska. The decision with reference to Massachusetts and also New Hampshire will be made within the next two or three weeks.
McCarthy competed against Johnson in several primary elections. Primaries are held before the political parties hold their presidential nominating conventions. Thousands of college students helped the McCarthy campaign in New Hampshire, the state that traditionally holds the nation's first primary. They told voters that their candidate would try to end the war.
My decision to challenge the president's position and the administration's position has been strengthened by recent announcements out of the administration, the evident intention to escalate and to intensify the war in Vietnam, and on the other hand, the absence of any positive indications or suggestions for a compromise or for a negotiated political settlement.
Johnson won the New Hampshire primary, but McCarthy received almost 42% of the vote. After McCarthy's success, Senator Robert Kennedy of New York decided to enter the campaign. He was a brother of President John Kennedy, who had been murdered in 1963. Robert Kennedy had served in his brother's administration as Attorney General, the nation's highest law enforcement officer. Many people were pleased when Robert Kennedy announced his decision. They liked his message. He said, "I run to seek new policies, policies to end the bloodshed in Vietnam and in our cities, policies to close the gaps that now exist between black and white, between rich and poor, between young and old, in this country and around the rest of the world." On April 4, 1968, civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. Robert Kennedy informed a largely black audience in Indianapolis, Indiana, of King's death and appealed for calm.
What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another and a feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black.
No words, however, could calm the anger in many black communities. Martin Luther King had peacefully led the civil rights movement. His assassination led to violence in more than 100 cities across America. Hundreds of people were killed or injured. National Guard troops were used to help police end the riots. After the riots, another candidate decided to join the campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination. The new candidate was Vice President Hubert Humphrey. The primary season continued. Eugene McCarthy and Robert Kennedy tried to show voters how different they were. Many voters, however, saw little difference between their positions on major issues. Both men opposed the war in Vietnam. Both supported social reforms and civil rights. Kennedy defeated McCarthy in the primaries of Indiana and Nebraska. McCarthy defeated Kennedy in Oregon. The next big primary was in California. Kennedy said he would withdraw from the campaign if he did not win the primary in that important state. Robert Kennedy won the California primary.
My thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there.
He might have gone on to win his party's nomination for president. And perhaps he might have even won the presidency, just like his brother, John. But Americans would never know.
Senator Kennedy has been shot. Is that possible? Is that possible? Senator Kennedy has been shot. Possibly shot in the head. I am right here. Rafer Johnson has a hold of a man who apparently has fired the shot. He has fired the shot. He still has the gun. The gun is pointed at me right at this moment.
Robert Kennedy was shot at the Los Angeles hotel where he had just given his victory speech after the California primary. He died a few hours later. The man who shot him worked at the hotel. Sirhan Sirhan was a Palestinian refugee. He said he blamed Robert Kennedy for the problems of the Palestinians. America's two major political parties held their nominating conventions in the summer of 1968. The Republicans met first. They gathered in Miami Beach, Florida, and it was soon clear which candidate had the most support. Richard Nixon had been the Republican nominee in 1960. He lost to John Kennedy. 8 years later, Nixon was a strong candidate to win the nomination again. The other candidates were Ronald Reagan, the governor of California, and Nelson Rockefeller, the governor of New York. On the first ballot, Nixon received more than twice as many votes as Rockefeller. Reagan was far behind. Most of the delegates then gave their support to Nixon, and he accepted the nomination. Spiro Agnew, the governor of Maryland, became the nominee for vice president. The Democratic convention was very different from the Republican one. The Democrats were the party in power. Protests against the war in Vietnam were aimed at them. Thousands of anti-war protesters gathered in Chicago, where the Democratic convention took place. Take it! Take it! The city's mayor, Richard Daley, ordered the police to deal with them severely. Many of the young protesters were beaten. The federal government later ordered an investigation. The report said the riots in Chicago were a result of the actions of the police themselves. Inside the convention building, the delegates voted for their nominee. They did not choose the candidate who had done so well in the early primaries, Eugene McCarthy. Instead, they chose the more traditional candidate, Hubert Humphrey.
Surely we have now learned the lesson that violence breeds counter-violence, and it cannot be condoned, whatever the source.
The vice presidential candidate was Edmund Muskie, a senator from Maine. In the general election campaign, Nixon and Humphrey both supported American involvement in Vietnam. But both of them also talked about finding ways to end the conflict. And they talked about finding ways to end the social unrest in the United States. Many voters saw little difference between the two candidates. A third candidate in the race was the governor of Alabama, George Wallace. As governor, Wallace opposed federal efforts to end racial separation in the South. He attempted to block the court-ordered registration of two black students at the University of Alabama in 1963. At that time, the university accepted only white students. The two were later admitted under federal protection. Wallace campaigned as the candidate of the American Independent Party. He denounced the federal courts, as well as communism and what he called the Eastern establishment in the United States. Many conservative, working-class Americans agreed with him and supported his campaign. About 6 weeks before Election Day, public opinion surveys showed that Nixon and Humphrey were very close. Nixon's major problem was his past. He had made enemies during his early political life. Humphrey's major problem was his current job as vice president to an increasingly unpopular president. About a month before the election, Humphrey said the United States would halt bombing in North Vietnam. But President Johnson did not give the order until 4 days before the election. Humphrey later said the delay had damaged his campaign beyond repair. On Election Day, Richard Nixon won, but not by much in the popular vote. George Wallace won 5 states and finished a distant third. Nixon would become president. It was a job he had wanted for a long time.
I saw many signs in this campaign. Some of them were not friendly. Some were very friendly. But the one that touched me the most was one that I saw in Deschler, Ohio, at the end of a long day of whistle stopping. A teenager held up a sign, "Bring us together." And that will be the great objective of this administration at the outset, to bring the American people together.
And it was a presidency that would change America and the world for years to come.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.